Good morning, everybody. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. It's Elder Care Radio, only on News Radio 890-925-KDXU. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
It is another Wellness Wednesday, and we are excited to be here. This is Elder Care Radio, offering information and action plans that can improve health and help us enjoy life more. It's exciting that to be here, and again, it's a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday.
Yeah, here to help you live your very best life.
So we've been encouraged to be involved in social media, and I'm sure that there's a, you know, good reason for that. It's just not something that we've ever really done. You know, we have Facebook accounts, right? Well, we have a shared Facebook account that we've kept, and every once in a while.
We do have a Pathway account.
Well, we do. We set up a page there. But, you know, we've been encouraged to get involved with that. And so I guess we would like some help in that. If you want to, you know, connect with us on Facebook, we'll do that. If you know some other platform that we should be engaged in, we would be more than happy to figure that part of it out. We're just kind of going through this and working our way through. So you let us know if there's a better connection that we should be making with the community, because we really want the community to understand the information that's available and the choices they have, so that they can make the best decisions for themselves and be their own best medical advocate. We also have been told that memes are interesting kind of a way to remember things. And so we were thinking, well, so, you know, what could be a meme?
What would our meme be?
Yeah, so, and this is a work in progress, but tell me what you think. The closest you can get to heaven on earth, Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. What do you think? The closest that you can get to heaven while on earth.
Well, I can think of other places you can get closer to heaven, but that's not bad.
Well, yeah. I think you're missing the meme part
of it. The hospice part of it.
Yeah, it's not very memey. It didn't make me smile or laugh.
All right, we'll work on that. Anybody have any ideas or input? We'd love to.
I think Rick Astley is big. You can be Rickrolled. Have you heard of that one?
No.
Never going to give you it's a young person.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, never
going to
give you up. Yeah.
All right, and then
I think you'd have to see the picture to enjoy the meme.
Yeah, we need a picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the picture in the meme?
A pathway from
Earth to heaven. I guess kind of like a stairway to heaven.
Well, you're closest.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
The closest you can get to heaven right here on Earth.
The crossover.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, but if we have to explain it, it's probably not a good meme.
It's not a good one. My son, actually, who's 20, thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, and then another point of news, we've been invited by the Catholic Church to join with them and talk about palliative care in the community.
And what an honor. This is the second time they've asked us to come. So they asked us to do one of these events last year. And it just had such great support, and people in their community and their congregation have continued to ask for, you know, help and assistance and guidance, and have mentioned to the administrators over there that they'd like to see us come back. So what an honor. Thank you so much for inviting us.
So November 15th at 7 o'clock,
right.
We're going to be in their Father Cousy Hall, their social hall, and there'll be food. There'll be prizes. We'll have, you know, some quick things, games to play. Really, it's just going to be, if you ask a question, you get a chance at a prize, because we really want this to be an engaging conversation with the community and answer questions that people have. So either come to enjoy the food, or to find out what questions are being asked and maybe, you know, hear the answers to those if you want. But we would invite everybody. It's open to the entire community. So let's make a big show of it and see how many people we can get there. It's a pretty big location. And so those are things that are happening in the community. But as we've talked about, you know, palliative care in the community, we know there are some gaps in care that are hard for people to get past sometimes. We want to provide as much care for everybody as we can, and have that at no cost through insurance, and Medicare pays for many things that people aren't taking advantage of, and we want them to do that.
Well, and just to weigh a little bit more on that, you should understand that our palliative program is 100% paid for by your Medicare insurance benefit. Medicare, Medicaid, and many other private insurances pay for that benefit. So that palliative benefit is covered for free under your hospice provision. Where the word hospice is scary for some people, that wasn't how it is intended. It's just how it's been used here in Southern Utah, and that's really what we're trying to change, that perception of what it can be. It's really a very expanded palliative program supposed to help you live your very best life for as long as we can help you live. It's a stress reducer on your caregiver as well as yourself.
But we know that not everybody can qualify. You know, they may have some needs or some issues that don't necessarily qualify them under Medicare standards for Medicare to pay for some in-home care. And in-home is really where that care needs to be for a lot of people. And those kind of cares would be maybe they need a little help in making sure they're taking their medications timely. Right.
Right.
And, you know, if they don't have family that's close, then it becomes a hard thing for everybody. You know, the whole family's worried about them. Maybe, you know, they may not be eating as often as they should. There are people who, as you get older, just forget to eat.
Or honestly, maybe it's just that they're afraid to shower alone because the fear of falling when you live alone, especially in a shower, is frightening to some people. And so if that's a concern for you, so you tend to put that off, your loved ones, your family members who aren't there might have, you know, concern or a need that is limited because you're very, very independent otherwise, living, you know, in your home, but you might have just a need for a slight or a very small oversight.
Right. And so we want to be able to bring the clinical care to those people who may not qualify under hospice, but it has to be affordable. It has to be reasonable and cost effective. And so we think we're in a position to do that. We have the staff. This is not going to be something that we are going to be doing to be profitable. It's just something that we want to do for the community so we can keep those costs at a bare minimum. And it's clinical care. You know, we can have nurses coming in and kind of overseeing that the daily activities of healthcare, right? The people being healthy, they can actually be engaged in that. We can have CNAs come in and maybe help with some of those other things, and we'll try and keep it as minimally costly as possible. This will be outside of insurance. If there's insurance available for what you need, then we would much rather do that where it costs nothing. But if you don't fit those categories, then this is kind of the beginning of what we think we can do for the community to solve that. You know, there's a chasm in that care at home. You know, for somebody who's been to the hospital a couple of times, and so they get on home health because home health can come into the home and do some things, but home health has real limitations these days.
It ends.
Yeah, it ends quickly and abruptly. And so to be able to basically take on that responsibility after that, you know, at a level that...
A limited oversight.
Right.
Yeah.
Where people still get to, you know, live their life at home and enjoy doing that. I don't think there are many people that get excited about giving up the place that they've lived to go, you know, stay somewhere else unfamiliar just because they need a little bit of help, you know, on a few days a week. So we're trying to develop that, and we would take any calls or any questions on it. You know, if you know somebody who's living alone and their family is outside of the area, and we can help them get a little peace of mind, we would love to do that. So those are some things we're involved in. Today we were looking at, you know, we've encouraged people to talk to their doctor and to help their doctor become a better caregiver or care provider by being more involved in the information side of it. and so we wanted to go through, and I don't know that we're going to have time to cover everything, but to kind of get you an idea of how a conversation could go with a doctor, keeping in mind you only have 15 to 20 minutes. You know, medical systems today have this set up where your visit with your doctor is 15 to 20 minutes long, and if you don't really manage that time, it goes away and you walk away without as much healthcare information as you possibly could. So we're going to make some suggestions here. We're going to suggest that you actually create an agenda, actually write some things down. And we'll go through and how to organize that so that it makes sense. But if you write everything down and you have two copies of that, you give one to the doctor, so that they can actually be reading those while they're talking. They're not just stuck with trying to gather your question and then come up with an answer.
Well, how often do we have a plan or, oh, next time I go to the doctor, I'm going to ask this. Right. And you might even remember right before you go to your appointment, and you might remember when you're still in the waiting room or in the medical, observation room, you might remember your question, and then as soon as the doctor walks in the door, somehow the question leaves your mind because right. You're focused on, niceties and hellos, and then, updating on what's going on in your life, and then the doctor leaves, and you leave your appointment, and you say, oh, shoot, I forgot to ask that.
I'm going to have to set another appointment for 3 months from now and hope I can remember to answer that question. I think we all know that, a plan not written is only a wish, right? I mean, That's what it comes down to. So in business, we know that having a written plan for a meeting is going to make sure that we get everything done. So we would encourage you to just write things down. And these are the things that you should write down. First, create lists of everything. Okay, list the conditions that you have. Because while we would hope that our doctor knows us personally, and they do, they also know anywhere from 1,800 to 2,400 other people personally.
Right.
And they may not remember everything. So if you just put that list together so that that's right there in front of them,
and
then
really
there's not a
question.
I think
you need to explain that further again for those who haven't, heard our message about that before. You can do the research. Your doctor probably has, if he collects insurance, between 1,800 and 2,400 patients. So while he might remember your face and he might, remember you from your church or from, teaching one, or you were a teacher of one of his children or whatever your association is, they might remember personal things about you, but are they going to remember the details that are so intimately important to you, even in your medical care? This is no longer the days like Little House on the Prairie where we get to just call our doc and he comes to our house and knows, each of our children intimately and, when they had their last fever. It's not the same.
So help your doctor be better informed about you. Just
right.
Bring that list. So bring your list of conditions, but also then from there, ask him, are there any other conditions that I have that aren't on my list that I may not have known about? Because you may have gone to the doctor 3 years ago, and they may have explained a condition that you have and maybe given you a medicine for it or done something, but you didn't know that you have it. And we think you should be fully informed. So just ask them, are there any other conditions? Now, they probably walked in with a file folder or a laptop, or they have a computer there, and that is your medical records. He or she should be able to quickly go through and say, no, those are all the conditions that we're dealing with. And then we can have a comfort of knowing that, yes, we are actively managing everything that we have going. Okay. So then you have your list of conditions. List the interventions. Interventions are the drugs that we're doing or the lifestyle changes that we've had or things like that. All of the things that we're doing to try and deal with those conditions. So go ahead and list that. And then from that list, you should be able to say, are there any other interventions that would be appropriate? And that, again, when we make these lists, it's easy to follow up with these questions, and that's where we're going to get good information, right? So then ask them, okay, so these are the interventions. What are the other plans that we have for this condition? And our condition could be managed in one of three ways or dealt with in one of three ways. One, it might be cured, okay? We might have something like an infection that could be cured. Or it might be managed. Let's say we have a condition that is, we have high blood pressure.
Right.
And so we have a drug that we're taking for that, which is managing it. Or it might simply be monitored. It may be a condition that there isn't an intervention that we can actually do right now until it gets worse, and then we would deal with it. And that could be, kidney problems or, congestive heart failure. I mean, there are just certain things, and there are some big ones, but there are small ones too, that maybe there's nothing to be done about it right now, but that someday there will be, and that would then trigger that question. Go ahead.
And don't take for granted that you understand the plan for your care. Ask very specifically, is this a condition that we are treating the symptoms of that is short-term and temporary? Because if it is, you need to remember to follow up on when you stop that medication. While an antibiotic might have an end period, if it's something that we are trying to resolve on a long term, you might have 3 prescriptions, but, you know, refills on your prescription. But you need to follow up with when you stop it and if you need to refill it. So is it a curable condition? Is this a long-term management? And again, long-term management usually have plans to either change your medication because our bodies adjust and get used to the medication, and so we have to change it at some point in the future. You should understand that. Ask your doctor questions and mark on your calendar when to ask if it's an appropriate time to change meds and maybe go back to that one at a later date, but you know, time between them.
Or adjust dosages, because if we look at just the dosing, you know, when somebody's prescribed a medication, there's some standards, right? Every pill has a size, and that might be the same size whether no matter what your weight is, no matter what your age is, and no matter how responsive your body is to that drug. So really, that first prescription is only a guess, and we should try and figure out a much more precise formula for ourselves. And so maybe we should be taking more of it, and maybe we should be taking less. You know, it may do more than be effective, and maybe we, instead of one pill, it's a half a pill, or maybe instead of, you know, 2 pills, it's a pill and a half. Those are all options. And if we're trying to tune our healthcare to ourselves, then we need to do that. And if you haven't ever done that with your medications, this is a perfect time to talk to your doctor and say, hey, so these are the medications, these are the interventions that I've been using. How can we adjust these to better suit me, right? Now, for the doctor, and again, it's not the doctor's fault, it's the system that we're in. When you go to your doctor and say, hey, this is a problem that I have, and they say, well, here's an intervention, here's a medication that we're going to give you, and then 3 months later you come back, they're not going to necessarily be thinking about that particular conversation you had because they've had tens of thousands of them in between. Right. So if you don't bring it up, there's not going to be an adjustment. But you should be looking at adjusting those and tuning your medications. Specifically, if it was supposed to be a short-term medication, it should end. If it's a pain medication, we should really be looking at trying to end those. Now, if you're still in pain, that would be a conversation to have with your doctor, because pain changes. You know, it's not the same pain that it was. If you broke a bone and 3 years later you're still experiencing pain, then it's no longer the bone that's hurting.
And remember, we're not suggesting that your doctor is not the most incredible doctor. He probably is. But times are different, so we need to take onus or responsibility for that. We need to remember that it's unrealistic to expect your doctor to remember those details.
And to do the whole thing all on their own.
Right. It's absolutely impractical, but also unfair to have that expectation of him. He's going to do the very best he can, he or she. They're going to try and remember the details, and they're going to try and make notes on it. But you won't forget the details. So just be on your doctor's side and work in conjunction with them to make the best decisions for you. Be an advocate for yourself.
Right. And just be part of that team, an active part of the team where you're doing the things you can to make your doctor's responsibilities better for you. So another part of that is if it's something that's being monitored or managed, the question should be, when do we notice a change, and what's the next step in this? Let's say that I have high blood pressure, and I do, and I'm on lisinopril. And if my blood pressure starts going up again to where there's some concern, do I increase the amount of lisinopril that I take, or do we look at one of the many other options that are available? I don't, you know, blood pressure is probably a great example because